domestic air travel for business purposes has been allowed, subject to restrictions on the number of flights per day and authorization based on the reason for travel. The availability of port health services will also guide the scheduling of flights. The resumption of domestic flights will be rolled out in three phases. This phased approach will be guided by the following. Port health capacity initial period will also serve as a trial period. Lanseria Airport has arranged port health capacity, and the move to phase two is informed by current low infection rates in the inland provinces. We'll further engage with the industry stakeholders on the contributions that are necessary for port health. Guided by these considerations, commercial aircraft movement will be allowed from this airport during this phase. Phase one, phase two, phase three, we've got the Golden Triangle, which is OR, Cape Town, Kinshasa, and Lanseria, and phase two, which is Mpumalanga, Polokwane, and Bramfisher. Phase three, Kimberley, Upington, East London, Umtata, and Port Elizabeth. Guidelines to prevent the spread of the virus in civil aviation activities have been developed by SACA, and this will be implemented by the industry with SACA playing an oversight role. We have evaluated the plans in full and have also considered the non-pharmaceutical interventions as well as mitigation strategies. Airports, limited domestic air travel also means that flights will only be allowed to depart and land at selected airports in a phased manner, as earlier explained. Only passengers will be allowed inside the terminal buildings. Therefore, no accompanying members of the public will be allowed. Temperature screening will be conducted at all terminal buildings. No passengers will be allowed inside the terminal buildings without masks. Inside the cabin, full capacity will be allowed. It must be noted that the risk of COVID-19 infection on board a commercial passenger airline is lower than in many other confined spaces. All our commercial aircraft are fitted with the high efficiency particulate air filters, HEPA. These are manufactured to the same standard as those used in hospital, operating theaters, and industrial clean rooms with the safe efficacy of 99.7% in removing viruses. While the total air supply inside the cabin is essentially sterile and particle-free, the biggest risk is if someone enters or remains in that environment while unwell with a viral infection. This risk will be mitigated through the adoption of effective sanitization and personal hygiene protocols. The following measures will apply inside the cabin of an aircraft: no catering, no magazines. The last row will be reserved for isolation of suspected cases that arise on board. All aircrafts must be disinfected before entering into service and after each flight. On arrival, all passengers will be screened as they enter the terminal building. Suspected cases will be referred to Port Health. On rail, when we presented level 4 directions, we indicated that commuter rail will resume operations gradually on an incremental basis based on detailed plans submitted by operators. Indeed, the Gautrain resumed. Through our ongoing engagement and evaluation of PRASA's state of readiness to resume operations, we have concluded PRASA is not ready to resume with Metro Rail commuter service. We continue to work closely with PRASA in assessing each line and put measures in place to achieve an acceptable level of readiness. We have therefore revised our timelines in respect of the resumption of Metro Rail commuter service. The revised target date is now 1st July 2020 on the following lines: Pretoria, Pienaarspoort, Cape Town to Simonstown, East London to Berlin, and the Port Elizabeth to Uitenhage, long distance trains will remain prohibited. Public transport, with the increase in the number of people returning to work and learners and students returning to institutions of learning, long distance public transport crossing provincial, metropolitan or district boundaries is permitted to operate. The condition for such operation is that public transport vehicles are only permitted to transport persons permitted to travel between provinces in terms of the regulations. The time restrictions on all road-based public transport modes are lifted. Public transport will now be allowed to operate throughout the day. However, capacity restrictions remain. Minibus taxis 70%, buses 50%, e-hailing 50%, shuttle chauffeur 50%. All driver's license testing centers are also open as of the 1st of June. We remain guided by the risk-adjusted approach of government and have taken a cautious approach to the measures easing the lockdown effects on transport. We'll further continue with our engagement with the stakeholders within the transport sector to find solutions to difficult task at hand of balancing the competing interests and preservation of lives and supporting livelihoods. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Minister, Honourable Deputy Minister. Okay. From the look of things, she's fine. Can we get straight to the DG?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, allow me to indicate that the bulk of the presentation the Minister had covered in his address, and I would leave all of that that the Minister has covered and only cover the slides that have not been covered by what the Minister has raised, if the Chair is okay with that approach.
Long live the DG. Long live.
Thank you, Chair. I would then go straight to the preface of the presentation, and which is on the next slide. That preface, Chair, is mindful of the fact that transport is an enabler of economic activity, but more importantly, we are also cognizant of the fact that the virus reached our shores via transportation, and particularly the aviation sector, and hence what the Minister has indicated. So if I move along to the next slide, here I'm covering in this slide the global developments since 1 May. We have covered them since 21 May. We will need to do an update because a few other key issues have emerged ever since then. But of importance is that we are tracking what is happening globally, and we are benchmarking what we are doing here at home vis-a-vis what the rest of the world is doing in as far as transportation is concerned. Which of the cities and which of the countries are coming out of lockdown, which ones are going into lockdown, and what measures are coming. And we are also tracking the issues, Chair, pertaining to the high-risk countries on the WHO's list. And we are also looking at where opportunities exist for future opening and for the airlines and the airline industry of our country to plan ahead. If I move on to the next slide, this slide shows, Chair, the total confirmed cases per million people in a population. And the darker the color gets, purple, the higher the concentrations are, and the lighter it gets, the lesser the infection rates are per million people in a population. Now you can see where now the current focus is on and where the infection rates are. And if you compare this of importance in this regard is that When I will come to the next slide shortly, but for now, just note that there are 290 cases per million people in South Africa, and this is below the global average. The other important thing is that also below the global average is the number of people who die, and further to that is the fact that the recovery rate of our country is much higher than the global average. And with those averages, however, if I move to the next slide, Chair, you will then see from this slide that this is the timeline for South Africa, but on the African continent, we South Africa are sort of the epicenter for the African continent in as far as the number of infections. Most of the countries have quite lower infection rates and also significantly lower death rates. But of import is timeline and is that we are now in lockdown level 3. And as the chair has indicated, we need to brief the committee about that. One of our key considerations in the approach we have taken has been that as we speak, this being a novel virus, no one has all the answers. And the issue is that we are fighting this pandemic as we are also studying it and understanding its nature and the virus and its mutations and its impact and what it's doing. And medical science is also advancing and research is also advancing. And some of our own interventions are informed by this. You Chair would recall that earlier in lockdown level 5, among the directions we have issued based on the information and knowledge that we had at that time, we had directed that all cargo from high-risk areas, even maritime cargo, needed to be sanitized. And indeed, at that point, we were sanitizing all cargo that was coming through from those high-risk areas until medical science and research moved further. And now, with armed with new information to the effect that since where we are positioned globally at the center of a major trading route in terms of maritime routes, it is not possible for a ship to arrive here to us in less than a week. And knowing now how long the virus survives on surfaces and also considering the open seas, it will not be possible for that virus to survive the journey here. And with that, we were able to adjust our directions and we were able to move on based on available science and available knowledge to adjust our direction to the fact that it is not necessary to sanitize a cargo from the high-risk area. So we are using science and the knowledge that is available before us, and we make decision informed by that. And we also consider the capacity of our government. While we are benchmarking, we have to look at what those governments that are doing what they are doing, what they have in their capacity, and what is it that we have in our arsenal if things turn for the worst. And therefore, our approach has been to make the choices that we, as a South African government, as the Department of Transport specifically, will have the capacity to be responsive to and be able to contain. And we are also considering the circumstances unique to South Africa. And if I go to the next slide, Chair, we will see there that the conditions of South Africa look exactly like that. And it's much more easier to say to a person staying in that mansion in Sandton to say that they must self-isolate themselves. It's easy for them to do that. But if you were to tell the people staying in Straitla in Alexander to actually isolate themselves in a one-room scenario, it's simply laughable. And therefore, public transport, particularly taxis as well as trains, poses a huge risk for people who stay in conditions like that because they utilize those type of modes of transport. And this has informed our choices as well as our policy positions and approaches in how we deal with those two specific modes and as well as buses to prevent a huge catastrophe. And therefore, our approach has been that of caution and of being gradual and incremental in our interventions. And we have, as a government, adopted 5 levels of a risk-adjusted approach, which I will not waste the chair's time in as far as this is concerned. So our paradigm departure is what the minister has said, that central to our interventions are over and above every other thing, the preservation of life, and that's where our interventions are at, instead of necessarily thinking about the efficiencies of the transportation system vis-a-vis the right to life in this regard. So if I move on, Chair, those are the summary, and I will not waste time. I believe every one of these are known, and I will then want to move to slide number, let me see quickly, Chair, to slide number 68. I'm going to jump all of the slides knowing that the Minister has covered all those things covered there. He has given the directions and summarized them on rail. He has summarized aviation and public transport and roads and in all of that. So I will move straight to the issues pertaining to slide 68 being the taxi relief support proposal. And in as far as this is concerned, I now wish to indicate that we have made a commitment as government, and Minister has announced this commitment to say that we will support the taxi industry, and we have been negotiating with them for some time now, and we have now arrived, we had arrived at a point where most of the principles had already been agreed to and adopted. Amongst this was that this will become a relief support. It is not, I think the tax industry was proposing to us compensation for loss of income. This means that money that I should have made, please pay it to me. And in our negotiations, we made it clear that we will, as a government, pay relief, which is what we are doing across all sectors. We are indeed paying relief and not necessarily loss of income. And to that extent, we had engaged with the industry. That principle was accepted. We then moved further with all the opposition and with people questioning why would we want an informal sector that doesn't contribute to taxation, and why should taxpayers' money be utilized for subsidizing an industry of that nature. We think we have crossed that bridge, and we have made our thinking known, and why government has adopted a policy position to provide relief in the first instance, and to also consider the informal sector. Hawkers, saloon owners, and unregistered businesses are being assisted in terms of the available relief funds. And to that extent, the taxi industry is no exception. It too needed to be assisted, but with the clear understanding that the payment is an ex gratia payment, a payment we're making when there is no legal obligation to do so. And that was the point of departure on which we have negotiated. In return, we had asked that we utilize the opportunity provided to us by COVID to actually fast track the discussions we should have had at an endeavor that was postponed in April due to the effect that the lockdown came, and to utilize that to address the key issues. Negotiations have happened on that with both the two entities, first Santaco as a council, and also the largest association, MTA. In all those initial discussions, there were no objections whatsoever to the issues that we have raised. There were questions of clarity, there were engagements, but we did clarify everything to the effect that there will be formal registration, there would be registration for tax and for all other things, and registering of employees, and including taxi drivers, including queue marshals, including security officers, including admin staff, patrol vehicle operators, and so forth. And that we will utilize the taxi operating license as a basis for us to do payments to everybody. If I move along to the next slide, Chair, one of the considerations we are taking into consideration in this regard was the fact that there has been a reduction in the seating capacity and loading capacity for taxis, but we have also noted that the interprovincial travel or long distance taxis were not allowed to operate during the earlier phases of the lockdown, and even further, cross-border operations were halted completely even till now. So with that in mind, we are there to take it into account that this was the case, and we had almost found each other with the Treasury. We are now awaiting the taxi industry to revert back to us. We have a deadline of Thursday for them to come back to us with their proposals. We have been hearing media interviews since yesterday and today that it appears they are holding a different view, but they have not yet formally communicated to us. We know that today they sent a letter to the minister to the effect that they want to declare a dispute. We will take it from there, but we are still available to negotiate with them to take the process forward and to have it in that way. I now wish to move, Chair, to the area of our public entities that have been hit hard by COVID and the impact it has had on them. And if I move to the next slide, here on this slide, Chair, I'm showing the issues pertaining to the main of our entities that have been hit the hardest by COVID. First, the airports company, South Africa. It, together with the two others, ATNS as well as SACA, have been hard hit, but Airports Company has been hard hit the most because they have tried to previously diversify their revenue streams, and their main revenue stream remains aviation-related activities, and that's where they get their money for charging landing fees, parking fees, ramp fees, processing of passenger fees, and all of those. Then secondary, their other revenue stream is where they play the role of landlord, and they hire out facilities to supermarkets, restaurants, everybody, hotels, in other instances, and so on at airports, to be able to generate income there. Then lastly, their consultancy and aviation expertise services, the professional services they render internationally and so on, and on a small scale, global investments that they are making. So in all of those revenue streams, they've been hit very, very hard. First, the consultancy service is not being utilized now with many airports and with aviation being hard hit. The global investments are not making well with aviation having been hit hard globally. There's been zero landings for some time, and now only repatriation and evacuation flights, and the domestic flights have only resumed of recent. So, and albeit on a small scale. And lastly, the tenants who are renting out facilities of AXA have not been able to pay with airports having been shut down. They have negotiated repayment holidays for payment holidays for their rental of the facilities and so forth. So they've been quite hard hit. This far, the earliest estimates we have made and the calculations of loss of revenue and income amount in the region of 11 billion. We are negotiating with the Treasury to see a diversion and also a differentiated approach, a portion of cash injection, but also the portion of them raising revenue on an international market. And with a government guarantee in hand, they should be able to do so. The negotiations with the Treasury are ongoing. We are now at a stage where we are going to, Minister will submit a letter to the Minister of Finance asking for the same after we and the Treasury have done number crunching. BRASA is another hard hit entity with lockdown processes. It has been shut since lockdown till now. Even the meager revenue that used to make 10% of their annual revenue has all but disappeared. This has meant that many of the things that typically this revenue covered couldn't cover. For the first time, they found themselves unable to pay even to the pension funds and all other issues, and We know what the difficulties they are in. Plus, we are dealing with it with the Treasury on a separate basis. We have done an interim intervention to get them some cash to keep them liquid, but we need to have a long-term view on the restructuring of the entire balance sheet in as far as cash flow requirements are concerned. They are, if you look at them straight on a balance sheet, it looks very healthy. They are sitting anywhere at any time between 16 and 18 billion healthy. But if you look at where the money is locked in, this is not where, as a business, they would need all of that money locked there. So previously, Treasury has been on a piecemeal, adjusting that budget, giving some money and converting some capital to OPEX on the understanding that it will not be utilized immediately, with the proviso that in future years, Treasury will then replenish that capex. So we have been on that mode, but we now need a permanent solution to the finances of PRASA. As the turnaround is happening at PRASA, and the administrator is doing an excellent job of cleaning up and getting rid of all rogue elements, and of also embedding things and addressing the AG's queries and strengthening systems, and also looking at rejigging the entire business model of PRASA as a whole and fast-tracking key programs, including capital programs. We now need to have a financial plan that truly supports these interventions and efforts to turn the entity around. So COVID just became an added huge pressure on PRASA, which was already way affected by the challenges it was facing. On the road accident fund, it too, as you may know, it has been hard hit, and the debt has been accumulating over a long time. Minister has now directed that we study that debt carefully. We now need to look at it from an actuarial point of view and to see where did the wheels go off and what has happened and why is it spiraling so much out of control. We now need to look at all of that and to also look at the possibility that there may have been collusion and there may have been wrong practices that have taken root, and no wonder it may have increased this rapidly. Now, Road Accident Fund is a huge threat. It's also a threat to the national fiscus. The Minister of Finance have announced this in the budget vote. He has indicated the challenges were looking at in as far as that is concerned. We seek to stabilize this. RAF is in the courts now. It's fighting for its long-term survival. We are looking at reviewing contracts of all that have not served us well. We need to review all of that. And those who have been beneficiaries of the system till now have been fighting us all the way. But we support the management of RAF and its leadership in trying to bring stability to the fund and to stem it hemorrhaging financially. And to that extent, the COVID has come at a very terrible time. It's now hit them very, very hard. They have had about 6 billion loss of revenue because no one was traveling and very few cars were pouring fuel. And because they work on a basis of their premium being the collection of a percentage from the fuel levy, they've been hit the hardest. So if we do not make an urgent intervention into their affairs, and if we do not allow them to get bridging finance quickly on the international market and a little cash injection, then they would run out of cash in no time, and they would not be able to honor and settle even some of the long-standing and settled claims to this extent. SANRAL is another big entity that also has been hit the hardest by COVID. SANRAL has been struggling anyway, based on the GFIP program and the need for finalization of ETOS. And we see that there's been a huge challenge of the reality that without people traveling and with all interprovincial travel closed, very few cars have been going through the toll gates, and revenue that was supposed to have been collected has not been collected in that period. This now has meant that the added pressure on GFIP that we have been having all along has increased significantly, because we now must outlay much more from the side of non-toll portfolio and to cross-subsidize the toll portfolio. And that breaching of that Chinese wall is what has shaken the balance sheet of SANRAL as a whole, and it has put it in an unenviable position, and hence is downgrade by all rating agencies, and also it suffered a further downgrade when our sovereign was downgraded by Moody's, and now it's also sub below investment grade. SANRAL itself, I must indicate to the committee chair that it's a well-run entity. Its projects are quite satisfactory. The quality of work being done and the quality of the road South Africa is enviable to the rest of the world. However, GFIP has worked the very foundation of SANRAL, and it has called into question the need for us to have a rethink about how roads must be financed in South Africa, because the current model is actually under severe and extreme pressure. And I think COVID has just made matters quite worse for SANRAL. We are now looking at emergency funding for SANRAL, and where we have already with the Treasury restructured the reprioritized the budget to get some more money to them of immediate cash injection of about 2 billion. But we, however, need to also assist them to raise funding of their own balance sheet. That's how the SANRAL model was always intended to be. And we are talking to the New Development Bank to see if it can give favorable rates as South Africa is an investor, despite the fact of the downgrade. And those negotiations are going well. Minister will also have to proceed and finalize with Minister of Finance in this regard. But our discussions now with the Treasury have been finalized last week, and we think we will have a solution for the issues of SANRAL in the interim. The permanent solution will be found once we know how we will finance the ETOLs matter. Chair, I now move to the smaller entities that has also been hit hard. The Railway Safety Regulator has had a loss of revenue, with almost many of the operators having been stopped from operating. The access fees that they normally levy as a regulator, they couldn't levy because no one was utilizing the network. And to that extent, their shortfall has been in the region of about 15.8. But cumulatively, what we see is that the shortfall is going to be about 120 million rands. And to that extent, we are already responsive. We have in the reprioritization exercise with the National Treasury, reprioritize our own budget and largely the budget in rail to ensure that we can get the necessary resources to the Railway Safety Regulator. With ARTIA, the Road Infringement Agency, Chair, there we have seen a loss of income of about 23 million a month, and we are looking at their request. Their original request was for 330 million, but after we did our number crunching, we realized they need about 218 million, and they can keep afloat, and also by deferring for some time the introduction and rollout of ARTO, which we had intended to roll it out in July. We will now not be able to do that because all the resources that were required to do such work have now decimated. We will look at a rebound, and most likely at the beginning of the next financial year will be the best time to, if things stand the same and the variables are not very different from what we are projecting to the future. Chair, again, with the cross-border road agency, we have also reprioritized our budget. We will give them the 100 million of the 104 they require. And we are talking to the Treasury to also return the favor to the rest of the SADC countries who, although we have a SADC protocol on the free movement of people, our trucks as well as our taxis and buses and everybody crossing the border, are required to pay also for local permits, which we, South Africa, do not levy to all other vehicles coming to our side because of the existence of the protocol. We have now agreed with the Treasury that the remainder of the money the CBRTA requires will be raised via those revenues. We are waiting for the final documents from the CRBTA. We will get the minister to submit them to the Treasury, to the Minister of Finance, and we would seek to raise the remainder of the money from there. With the Road Accident Fund, as I've indicated, there are shortfall of 4 billion now from the levy directly. We will have to be raised, and we are also supporting their idea of a bridging finance. On the issue of SACA, the South African Civil Aviation Authority. They require about 300 million. We have also prioritized some money from us and will be able to support them over the next 6 months to be able to survive. As far as AXA is concerned, we are looking at an initial 2.5 billion, as I've indicated, but then we would have to also support them with a guarantee to go to the open market. Chair, I now move to the next slide, which now indicates all of what I've been saying in a table format of the intervention and the amounts that are being requested as additional to what we, on our budget, we couldn't cover and what we have been discussing with the Treasury. That will amount to about 27.5 billion that is required to have the entities back to full operation. I think, Chair, I will conclude there on that slide with the rest has already been given, but we are good at providing additional support, including also supporting rural municipalities and rural areas with further program providing PPEs. That's where we will end the presentation, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much to the DG. Honorable members, there is the presentation update in terms of what the department is doing during this level 3 of the coronavirus disease 2019. Let's hear inputs from members.
Chris Unsinger, Chair.
Honorable Unsinger, you may
listen.
You'll follow, sir.
Manu.
You will follow, Honorable Manu. Let's start with Honorable Unsinger.
Thank you, Chairperson. May I ask? Well, let's get the listing first, it seems, Chair.
Yeah, you know, sometimes I know this thing normally happens, but let me take it that we normally work that way. Honorable Ansinger, Honorable Manu, who's the third one?
Honorable McDonald.
Honorable McDonald, you are number three.
Honorable May.
Honorable May, you are number four.
Honorable.
Come again. Who's number five?
Honorable Ramadwa.
The number five?
Number six? Mabena.
Oh, Mshoni. As Togo, the little bunny look. Number six. Right. Are we done with the list?
Makoseni.
Number seven.
Makoseni.
Yeah, number seven.
Yes. Can you hear me, Chair?
Yes, I'm hearing you. I'm saying you are number seven, Honorable Makoseni. Okay. Thank you very much. Let's then move. Honorable Hansinger.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, may I, on behalf of the DA, convey our condolences and sympathy following the sad news of the passing of your caucus members and our colleague, Honorable Dora Tlamini, which served in the portfolio of public enterprise. May her soul rest in peace, and may her family and friends and you as a caucus find comfort. Then, thank you very much, Minister Mbalula, for your briefing. And I also want to acknowledge the presence of Deputy Minister Mahatsi, and also thank the DG for his PowerPoint presentation. Now, Chairperson, at this occasion, I would also like to thank Minister Mbalula for his response to questions and queries during Level 5 and 4, as well as the department and staff and officials of most of the SOEs. However, there are some unresolved issues, and I would like to raise a couple of these for the minister or the DG to respond in order to share some of the information on these, on this, on a wider platform. So in terms of aviation, in lockdown three, it was now announced that there is a particular procedure and a process for anybody to follow upon the desire to fly domestically and even abroad. Now, I've had many queries around this. People have even paid flight tickets. They have followed the procedure, but at the last moment, these aeroplanes were stopped, often, you know, basically on the runway, which has come to a huge, you know, embarrassment, and it obviously also lead to diplomatic issues between us and other countries. And I would like the minister to just share the complication around this, and in particular, you know, how it can happen that, for instance, a KLM flight was refused entrance into our airspace, and I'm also aware of a couple of other airlines. In terms of the road accident fine, I still find it very frustrating that the road accident fund is not regarded and declared as an essential service under level 3, which denies access and approach by, you know, people having queries, etc. And a lot of these people just go to the road accident fund offices because that's their only means of contact. So if we can just get some form of explanation, because it adds a lot of frustration and a lot of queries as the department might experience themselves as to why and why not, you know, the road accident fund isn't an essential service under level 3. I'm also aware of severe changes that have been entered into in the functioning and the structure of the road accident fund, yet we as the portfolio committee have not been briefed on those changes at all. I understand that the defense lawyers of the road accident fund have all been fired. I know of court cases and interventions of all sorts that has been engaged on and lodged. And I feel that we should get a thorough briefing on the way that changes have been lodged in the functioning of the Road Accident Fund in terms of the structure of the administration and how it's been functioning. And in terms of maritime, during previous stages of lockdown, there has been major issues with access to containers, simply because containers are not loaded in one container for essential goods and another container for non-essential goods. So a lot of people had huge problems in accessing their own containers. And in the meantime, up till now, huge fees and tariffs have been charged for these containers still being stored and importers not being able to access these. So I'm asking whether any consideration would be given to either waive some or part or everything of these huge fees and tariffs which people have now find themselves being built up under level 4, 5 and 4 up till now. In terms of PRASA, apparently, security companies have not been paid, and that has led to the huge vandalism that's been experienced and the total destruction of large sections of Metro Rail and PRASA, which is really sad to see. And if one would visit these stations and sections of rail, it has been vandalized extremely. And I would like to hear what the situation is. Is it true that security companies have not been paid? In the discussion which we had earlier on, when looking at the 2019-2020 budget, I know of it's been said there that about 2 billion rand that was intended for refurbishment of coaches was used for other expenses. So if we could just get some indication, I've also written to you, Minister, around the readiness, because already it's a disappointment of four commuters not having any Metrorail service from the 1st of June, and now it's been postponed till the 1st of July, which obviously also links to the threats of taxi fares being increased. And then lastly, Chairperson, in terms of the trucking sector, huge queues are building up at border posts, especially at the Lebombo border, which under the current conditions take 3 to 4 days to cross. We've seen queues there of more than 10 kilometers of trucks extending 400 in number. And it's really a challenge for truckers to now cross that Lebombo border post in particular with no facilities, often taking as much as 3 to 4 days just to get through the queue and over the border. So if the department can consider any intervention, you know, for facilities and just to engage, the challenges are known and it's really difficult, and it's not on the South African side alone. We understand all of that, but just in terms of support and facilitating our truckers who really have gone through a tough time and who have carried the economy to a large way, I think it would only be just and fair and great for the department to then facilitate the fact that they've got to stick at these border posts for 3 to 4 days without any facilities, no toilet whatsoever or other facilities. Those are my questions. Thank you, Chair.
Masitholo, thanks, Honorable Ansinger.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good evening, Minister, Deputy Minister, colleagues, and DG. Well, thank you very much for the presentations. And I guess it's always a challenge in this tough time because maybe expectations and what information shared with us, highly appreciated, maybe at times it has got some gaps.
Honorable Chair.
That who is talking? Hello. Continue, Honorable Manu, sorry.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think some key things that I would have loved to hear, for instance, is when we move from level 4 to level 3, what are the things that we could have picked up, whether we are winning the battle or not? But without lamenting, maybe let me ask the questions that could also assist. Number one, there are reports that since lockdown level 3, there has been an increase in road crashes as a result of allegedly usage of liquor. Do we have statistics? What has been the level of arrests between level 4 and level 3? What are the numbers? And if what we are hearing is true, what is the department doing in terms of addressing that? Number two, I have personally observed that there is very little adherence to the 50% and 70% public transport loading capacity, specifically in the mornings, buses that are moving from Mpumalanga into Gauteng through Tshwane and the northwest staff from the North Hammanskraal and so forth. I've seen many buses without adhering to 50%, particularly in the morning. What is the numbers? What is the level of compliance? Can we have figures, numbers, and be able to know what are we doing in terms of enforcing those? Minister mentioned that the driver's license testing centers were open from the 1st of June. The reality, Minister, is that they were not open, but they were supposed to open by direction, which is certainly something that you could not have foreseen. It has created a lot of backlogs because people have been frustrated. They've been turned back in many places. As late as Friday, there are places which were not opened because they are not ready. Again, can we know what is the level of readiness of these driver's license centers? Are they opening? Because I know many which didn't open. Lastly, on the issue of PRASA, I would have loved to ask to know as a portfolio committee, what are the issues that PRASA was expected to adhere to that caused them not to be ready to start on the 1st of June? How then do we measure them to be sure that they are improving towards compliance for the 1st of July? When we just say they will move on July, the experience I have with driver's license testing centers is that they didn't open in June, 1st of June. Now, I would not like that we find ourselves in July that PRASA is not ready. We don't know what is it that they are not ready with. What is it that they are expected to do that they are not done by the end of May, so that we can know whether they are going there or not. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Siyabulela Mhlekazi. Let's get number three.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening, Minister, Deputy Minister, DG, honorable colleagues. It's a very difficult time during the COVID period that we've gone through, but it seems that there is a silver lining to this dark cloud. All these measures that we've brought has actually moved us in leaps and bounds to the formalization of the taxi industry with the claims that they will be able to do, and it's actually helped the department to legalize the taxi industry with all the taxation and the compliance issues that they have to do. I would also like to add my voice to Honorable Manchu. Can I have some statistics on how many drivers has actually been fined through level 4 and 3 for contravening the loading of passengers, the taxi drivers, buses, etc.? Can I have a statistic or a number of actual people being fined? I recently traveled from Cape Town to Bloemfontein and from Bloemfontein to Cape Town on the 4th and the 8th. I was not stopped once on the road, not asked, screened, or stopped, and crossed three provincial borders, there and back. Can I please have some clarity on the department? Are they assisting in the procedure of monitoring the provincial borders, or is it just left up to the police services, or are our traffic enforcement agencies also involved? Then there's an article about 10 million rands worth of aluminium cable that was stolen in from PRASA during this lockdown period. Is this also related to the security companies that have been told not to return and that have not been replaced? Also, the DG, you said that PRASA was unable to pay to the pension fund. We must find a way to give PRASA money, to put money into the pension fund, because there can't be a situation where people's pension funds are not being contributed to while they are working there. It is of utmost urgency that money being paid must be paid over to the pension fund. Then, Minister, DG, we need to get a decision on this e-tolls. We were told in January, I think, that within 2-3 weeks there will be a decision on e-tolls. It's now June. We need a decision on the e-tolls. What's going to happen? It can't be dragged on forever. I I see a lot of bus companies have now started moving between Johannesburg, Pretoria, Johannesburg and Cape Town, but I've not seen any Autopax buses. Are they not operating? Are they not operate? Or can't they operate? Is there a chance that we can get an answer on that, please? And then to finally, the companies that need money, like AXA and the South African Civil Aviation Authority, we must give them money that they can operate. We mustn't just give them money to pass the, so that they can just get there. We must give them money so they can operate at full capacity. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Lawrence McDonald. Latons, the Akbare from Fuas Cup. Over to
thank you,
Honorable May.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can you hear me?
Yes,
can
I
you
hear, you? Hear you. Yes, I hear you.
Chairperson, they say in politics must always be positive. Sometimes it's easy to criticize, but I would like to thank the minister, the DG, and everybody involved for the good work they are doing. We know it is difficult times, not only in South Africa, but also in the rest of the world. And we really appreciate the good work they are doing. But Mr. President, Mr. Minister, Honorable Minister, it is now the time that we must work together to make a success of this beautiful country. And I really hope that COVID-19 will force us to work together as different parties. Thank you.
Thank you, Mele. Let's go to Limpopo now and get Honorable Matwade.
Lokovela. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Greetings to the Minister, the Deputy Minister, the DG and the team, and my colleagues, Honorable Members. Honorable Chairperson, the DG on his presentation, he indicated that they are going to start with taxi relief support. I just want to check with the department because we are having a challenge that there are taxi owners who have sold or sold their licenses to other people who are on the line now. And now there is this relief support for the taxis. How are they going to do it? Which criteria are they going to use when giving them this money? Secondly, it's on the aviation. He indicated, in fact, it's the minister who said only passengers will be allowed inside the airport. There are those kids that are not accompanied, who are unaccompanied kids who must be handed over to the staff of the airport. How are they going to do that? That's my submission, Chairperson. Thank you.
No, thank you so much, Chairperson, and thank you for the opportunity. And I also welcome the presentation of the DG in as far as this is concerned. I think I have just a few questions here. I think even before we had COVID-19, SANRAL had indicated that there are a well-functioning entity as far as revenue is concerned, save for the GFIP crisis which was there. And I think at the time we accepted that SANRAL as an entity, even when we went and did oversight at SANRAL and we met with management and everyone, they did indicate that actually they are a well-functioning entity in terms of revenue. But the elephant in the room remains GFIP. So I'm not sure if it's, if you remove the GFIP crisis from SANRAL, will they still be hard hit? Because I understand that they've lost revenue in terms of toll gates, and that they will need a cash injection of about 2 billion rand. What I also need to find out and add, Chairperson, is this. The 2 billion rand which Treasury is busy now in terms of sourcing that money from the New Development Bank, I believe that is the BRICS Bank. Now, will there be a government guarantee, or will this be a normal loan which is coming from an entity or a finance institution going to another entity? Or will this 2 billion rand be backed by government? And also, I understand the DG is saying that they are specifically going to the New Development Bank at BRICS to try and get a favorable rate in terms of interest. Outside of the New Development Bank, which other sources have they tried? Which other finance institutions have they went to and they tried to access those funds? And then also, RTIA, you are indicating that they wanted the cash injection like in excess of 300 million rand. And then when you did your numbers, you found that they actually needed much more less. And you did indicate that there were some line items which you managed to shift around in terms of deferments. But can you give us maybe in terms of details, what is it that from the original request that you did not accede to that actually made you to get to the 283 million rands which is there? And then also one other issue is in terms of the taxis. I hear the DG spoke about the Taxi Council and the largest association being the NTA. Now, when you listen on the news and you listen to the spokespersons of these entities which is like they've just spoken about, they are painting a picture of hostility between them and government. And they are saying that government is being confrontational, that government is going to court to try and stop or halt the fare increases in Gauteng. And here the DG is painting a picture of a continuous engagement with these. Now, if you're engaging with two parties or with three parties, one would understand that there should be protocols in place where you say, okay, guys, we're now still in the negotiating table. However, in terms of communication, this is the standards that we're communicating with. Because currently what we're experiencing is that government is saying this, but then NTA and also the Taxi Council is saying another issue. And one last thing is, many of the taxi ranks, once there are no screening devices, they don't check temperature. And secondly, when people get into taxis, there are no sanitizers. And thirdly, many taxis are not fumigated after each and every trip. But if that is a tall order to ask, what that the department is doing continuously engaging with the taxi industry to try and ensure that each and every taxi rank which is there, at least I saw on the presentation that you are trying to get screening devices to each and every taxi marshal there is in the country. Can you give us an update as to how far are you there? Have you done 30%? Nationally, or are you at 10%, and which taxis or which taxi ranks or which provinces have been prioritized? Because currently what we see when we go on to these taxi ranks, yes, people are wearing masks, and you know, but you move from this taxi rank to that one and the standards are completely different. You know, it's like they're operating in silos. So if you can give us an indication as far as that one is concerned. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Mhlonishwa. You know, let's get Honorable Makhosini Shabangu.
Thank you, Chair. Let me take this opportunity to accept the presentations that were done by the Minister and the DG. My first question would be, South Africa, according to the presentation, is one of the leading COVID-19 pandemic in Africa. What might be the cause of this? Two, transport in particular, being the cause of COVID-19 pandemic, how do you intend to control the health of drivers and passengers if they could be found being testing positive after the passengers have left, in order to minimize the pandemic? Three, is the minister committing himself after the new appointments that after giving cash injection to public entities, we won't find them needing another cash injections within a short space of time because of corrupt officials? And then finally, many driving schools were found guilty in the Free State. Their owners were charged because of the malpractices that are happening there. Do you have any intention of rectifying these wrongdoings across South Africa as a whole? Because they are the cause of accidents and even spread corona because of non-compliance on the roads. I thank you.
Precise to the point. Thank you. Let's hear Honorable Nketa Mabala. Mondes.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I want to take the opportunity to appreciate the report, because it is an eye opener and it gives us more highlight what is going on in the industry and in the But my question is that one of the taxes. If I can get some clarity, how many taxes that are going to benefit from the grant, the relief fund? How many they can have a secret petrol? And the other question, I'm worried about the approach with the cases, because if we can get some clarity, which association are they? Because from the statement that my cases are very different, it seems that they are not talking to one association. So if they can give us that. And then another question is that one. I worried about the issue of falling off RARS of that population, because my understanding, sometimes they can actually educate me. They're supposed to open RARS now, because RARS is actually very, very critical, because there's a lot of things that are claiming their funds, they're getting their funds, which they claim from RAF. So now if the RAF can be opened. And the other question is, I'm worried about the increase of safety fees. If they can give us some clarity, what are the department going to do now? The taxes are saying they are going to increase their fees now by 100%. The commuters are going to suffer a lot. If you can give us that one, then the position, I take I went to visit Baragwanath Hospital. You see, after this level, after level four, when we are entering level three, when they are opening alcohol, they have a lot of accidents. This is happening, especially in Kauken. Paragona Hospital will see what I'm doing. So I don't know what the department is going to do to work together with other departments, especially the health and the other departments, because to keep on opening alcohol sometimes is a chaos, because we are counting a lot of visitors now. And the other interpretation is that one, what I want is they can untap the formerly registration as a business. The taxes that are registered as a business will be paid into registration for taxes. If they can take an untap this one, because I don't understand what is the actual they want to do on that one. And the last one, Chairperson, which I want to from the department, the backlog, because if the taxes says they have been promised by the department that they are going to get some grant, or they're going to get some relief fund, if that can be counted, how much is going to be needed, and what will be the backlog on that one? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Well, those are the inputs, clarity seeking questions, Honorable Minister. Let's hear you and your team. Over to you, sir. Honorable Minister, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm here, Chair. I will give the DG to start first, and then I will round it off.
Thank you very much. That is in order. DG.
Thank you very much, Chair. Allow me to respond to the questions that have been raised. First, with the questions raised by Honorable Hansinger. Honorable Hansinger, the issues that you raise of the permits that you say are withdrawn at the last moment, it's something that I'm aware you had brought to our attention earlier. And we had attended to that. As far as we know, that has been attended. We do not control, as the Department of Transport Border Management. That's the job of the Department of Home Affairs. And immigration services are rendered by Home Affairs and not us. What we do is to grant permits once a person has cleared his issues with the country's immigration services that they are entitled to either fly here or come here or otherwise. What I'm aware about is that equally, if a permit has not been granted to you, there's nowhere in the world that any country is going to allow you to simply say, I'm going to fly there anyway. When I'm there, they are bound to give me the permit on arrival. There's no such thing that I'm aware about, and I don't think that any of our flights, whether South African registered or otherwise, can ever fly to other jurisdictions without being given permits prior. And I think that is a key thing. Equally, we do not process the permits alone. There are other agencies and other departments we work with to process permits and to give approvals. And where licenses are being granted for the first-time users, for specific purposes or for specific aircrafts, that have never been registered before and cleared. There's an independent licensed servicing council, which in terms of the law, we the department have got to process everything, then send to that council. That council then has to sit and provide approvals. Unfortunately, during COVID, people who are in distress obviously request a permit now and want to fly almost immediately. It has not always been the case to be able to approve that that happens. But we have had instances where even at 3 o'clock in the morning, we have had to get a virtual meeting of the Air Services License Council, understanding the situation of those being repatriated and being evacuated from other countries to come back home, where we have had to get an approval of such matters on an agency basis. So we have been going out of our way to accommodate almost all requests. But there's also where you see some airlines want to diplomatize commercial transactions. In essence, and they want to jump the queue. There's a number of slots that we have granted per day because we are not operating at full capacity. And when we give them a date to say, your slot will be the next day, they don't seem to want to agree with that. Then we start seeing letters of ambassadors and everybody saying they must be given preference over and above everybody. And that can be the case as it is. South Africa also has diplomatic relations and we do not do such undue pressures on other countries. And I think where it has happened, it has. There's also instances where it's just plain and lawlessness of where people, without even having applied for a permit, they want to breach our airspace and simply fly in. Such are never allowed by all protocols, even by ICAO protocols. Those are not allowed, and we have since handed over some of the cases. The minister is fully aware of the cases that have been referred to state security and to police to investigate and to follow them through in this regard. So I think it's a mixed bag, but the border management work stream of the net joints has been doing an exceptional job. At one of the previous meetings, we were requested to bring statistics about repatriations and this, and we did present the bulk, Honorable Hansinger, of the cases go just smoothly and people are repatriated daily and they never get to arrive at your desk. The people that get to come to you are the ones that somehow they are dissatisfied with the procedures we have laid down and that we are putting on the table and which everybody has been complying with ease. It's those that say, I want to fly today. I want to come now. Not ready for tomorrow. And I think we have had a whole host of such matters that we told them we've got to make do. But in many of the instances, even those, when we listened carefully and we listened to the circumstances under which South Africans may be in another country and they are under pressure, but there are many instances where we have pushed the envelope to make sure that they do come home. On the issue of RAF as not an essential service, indeed, RAF was not declared an essential service, not for our lack of trying. We had attempted to put as many of our entities as possible. But as you know, even earlier, toll gate operators were also not declared essential service. It became a bit of a challenge, and later they were accommodated as such. Even rail logistics workers were not accommodated. We had to push the envelope. Now in level 3, some aspects of RAF have been declared, and I think they have begun operations, and I'm sure you'll remember that the skeletal staff at RAF that was supposed to process the most urgent of applications and the most urgent of things that needed to be paid. There was then a scare at Erosis. There was a staff member who was tested and was found to be positive. and the offices had to be closed up, and all staff had to be quarantined for 14 days, and that disrupted operations. But I think we are now back at where they would be then able to start processing the claims as we go forward. And as far as the issue of containers, I'm sure Honorable Hansinger will appreciate that although these things come via the port and they are brought by ships, but this is trade. This is not our department. It's the Department of Trade and Industry. This is the issue that they need to sort out, including DPE, because the tariffs are not being levied by our entity, but they are being levied by the Transnet Post Terminal, which really does not report to our minister, but reports to the Minister of Trade and Industry, of Public Enterprises. So for that reason, this matter, we had been seized with it, we had engaged and made representations, but it is not our issue. It's not what we should decide upon or address. It should be addressed by DPE. On the issue of PRASA and payment of security companies, if indeed the vandalism that has been reported is linked to the fact that security companies have not been paid. Truth be told, Honorable Hansing and members of the committee and chair, the vandalism in the PRASA network has been happening for time immemorial. It has heightened, it has increased. There were times it was a bit contained, but it has been ongoing ever since. And we have pinpointed to the reason why is it happening. The reason is that the corridors are open and they are quite porous. They are like South African borders. That's why stopping illegal immigrants entering the country is so difficult, because the borders are quite porous. In the same manner, our corridors, rail corridors, are quite porous. They are not fenced, they are not protected, and that's why they are game. And because we have such a long network of corridors, they are game to, and often where the highest so-called hotspots is where they are close to informal settlements, and where there's even been encroachment into that. Our lines are being stolen. Everything that's metal is being stripped. Some stations where trains no longer stopped have been stripped completely, and so forth. Is there a linkage between the dispute between security companies and the increase in vandalism? In December last year, we did a run and a bit of study and collection of data to see and comparison between previous months, and to compare with what was happening after the board, the previous board that has been dissolved, unceremoniously cancelled contracts. So in that way, yes, we were able to link that there was a spike of an increase in that reality. And we have since taken measures, as you know. One of the things we are preoccupied about is also the investigations that are being made on the suspicions that some of the security companies are actually colluding with syndicates that steal copper. And if that be the case, because it is inexplicable that where security companies that are appointed by PRASA and they get paid, copper gets stripped on their watch, and even in posts where they are supposed to have posted guards, we still have acts of vandalism. So, and the contracts that the board was trying to cancel were quite terribly written contracts, because they have no penalties. They don't say that if you are guarding this part to that part and there is vandalism anywhere there, these are the penalties that we will charge you for, and otherwise there's no such. And therefore, the contracts have been badly written. The court has said they needed to be extended. They are coming to the end of their life cycle. PRASA is in the process of recruiting and running processes of appointment for new service providers, and those will kick in. PRASA has appointed a new security manager, and we have looked at the proposals that have already been given of a new security plan, and we seem happy. In the tenders that are being issued for the protection of corridor, for both Mabopane and Central Line in the Cape, the first two that will be protected. Already those security measures that have been proposed in the draft security architecture and framework are being incorporated. amongst other measures that we have already began introducing, was that all signaling cables are now being buried, and they are buried quite deep and concretized and all of that, so to protect them from being easy peak for vandals. So the corridors will be protected with 8-meter high walls. So as a result, Chair, there is that scenario that after you protect the corridors in that way, then all assets within, whether they are stations, whether they are payways, whether they are overhead traction lines, whether they are signal cables or signaling equipment and so forth, will then all be easy to police and to protect in this regard. So yes, I think that is the issue, and we are really paying attention to that. The 2 billion that Honorable Ansinga said has been diverted. Indeed, the Treasury has approved, as I've indicated in the presentation, that 2 billion that is intended for capital be converted into OPEX to assist BRASA to pay its operational expenses that were necessary to be paid to continue operations at the time, with the proviso that recoveries of such capital will happen in the next financial years. The indication was very clear that even if general overhaul was to happen on some coaches, not all the money that had already accumulated over the previous 3 years would all be utilized in the same financial year. And the Treasury, in its wisdom, instead of outlaying a fresh allocation of 2 billion to BRASA in OPEX, decided on the conversion of that. I think it makes sense for the Treasury because of the opportunity cost. Treasury borrows money on a weekly basis on international markets. And if it borrows money too quickly, then it's not opportune because it starts paying interest on that money. So if BRASA is sitting with money in the bank, and what it generates vis-a-vis what the Treasury will actually pay in interest if it borrows that money on the international market, it makes sense for the Treasury of immediate to convert some of CAPEX into OPEX and then only borrow later as and when that money is now required for the rest of the general overhaul work that must be done. On the issue of the 1st of July and how are we going to do that, I'll answer also the same, which is what Honorable Mangu has raised. And I'll also go further to answer the issues Honorable Mangu say, what were the real issues, why we could not adhere to the deadline of June. First, Honorable Mangu, some of the infrastructure of BRASA was built in the 1930s, some of the stations. Let's consider the line like Binaspoort in Pretoria. Binaspoort, when you look at it, it was the last station on the line to Mamelodi, and it was meant just with that same platform of about 2 meter wide. It was meant for about, at most, about 300 passengers. Today, there are a lot of shacks and a lot of informal settlements and also RDP houses and developments that have happened around the area. Yet the station was never upgraded nor its capacity improved. So right now, the station takes, when we count on the number of passengers going through the EMV, the station takes about 2,500 people. Now, social distancing measures that needs to be put in place on the platform to make sure that crowd control, movement of people, and all of that becomes easier were a big challenge. And I think one of the biggest challenges the administrator is faced up with is the reality that the last passenger census of BRASA that was done some 5 years ago. So BRASA doesn't necessarily know, and with the old trains, there's no determination of how many passengers on a day are there because ticket sales are quite unreliable and quite erratic, as you may know. As most of the passengers, as you would have seen in the previous system, represent people who do not buy tickets, but they are actually using the service daily. And because the platforms and the corridors are so porous, people get from all sides of the station, and there is no
way without proper crowd control measures and passenger processing facilities that you would be in a position to stop people from riding a train. In itself, the platform is actually even smaller because most of the people actually ride the train on the coaches much ahead where the platform is. They are not even on the platform. So it's quite very difficult to police a scenario of that sort. What one of the key issues we were concerned about was a projection that station by station we ought to at least project how many passengers are likely to be on that train that day. And we also have got to look at with now the reopening of level 3 and the factories and so on, and if we had a good proper survey and census and we knew the passengers and we knew where these people are going to, how many get off at which station and how many come in, so on and on averages, we can then do better load in terms of the configuration for trains, in terms of provision of how many trains, and also looking at the leadway time, which meaning the timetable of how many trains must then move at what intervals. So that has not been easy. It was not finalized because of the difficulty with the numbers. We have had to go to the 5 years ago numbers, and we had been working on those numbers, rejigging them in terms of the output of what we see actually at destination in Pretoria. And we have been doing those calculations, and then we have been doing physical measurements at each station of the platform, of the 1.2-meter social distancing necessary and required, looking at the shortage and an audit of all our facilities. We shouldn't just say there are 4 toilets at that station. We need to look at are they all functional? Are they? And that audit was not complete. And we had to do this line by line. On Pinarsport, it was a bit more quicker to do that because the new trains can count how many passengers are coming in into them. But here's a pitfall, and which is what we are seeing, and we are also amending our specifications for Givela when it produces these new trains. When the train reaches its maximum capacity of 3,300 of passengers that needs to go in, it just turns the red light. It doesn't count anymore how many more come in, even if they do. And you actually have 3,500 passengers inside. The train will not tell you that there are 3,500. It will tell you, however, that it has reached its maximum capacity at that floor. And that floor we've got to address so that future trains that are being produced, and even these ones, when they go in for service, that we reprogram them so that they can, it can show, the lights can still turn red to show that it's overloaded, but it must count everybody coming so that at any time, we know how many people are in there, and actually the driver needs to actually close doors to say the train is full. So all of that and the technology we're addressing, including technologies like cameras that easily count people as they come in. If you look at the quality and the nature of the stations that have been built, I mean, if you consider a fabric station and you look at it carefully, you would then realize that this was meant for the Samanco workers, 300 of them going to work there, that thing, and later they get on that. It was just a platform. No passenger handling terminal, nothing, no seats, no what. But today, it's not that 300 people that are going in there. There's in excess of 1,800 people that get onto that platform. They are so packed. It's not okay. And if you look at the fact that there's just 2 toilets for all staff and passengers, we now must make up. We have to bring additional capacity. We have to do all of that and ensure that everything that is required. So it was not easy for us to finish quickly and on time. We needed more time, and we needed to stress test the plan, and we needed to also review. It would have been quite irresponsible to actually proceed and reopen without having done this indication station by station and having measures on each and every station, and that we can also determine. For instance, now, we do realize that with the vandalism that has happened on the same line I'm using as an example, it is not possible to have a dual service, meaning a two-way traffic going that way. What we would do, though, is to provide, to be able to cover enough numbers on that 8 trains in the morning go in the same direction. And in the afternoon, equally, 8 trains going back the same direction, giving a total of 16 trains, because after we did the measurement inside some of the trains, we have come to the conclusion that because of the way the train configuration is, we will need only to load about 330 people in all the trains, with an average of about 15 people per carriage. So now that tells you a story. It tells you of total reduced capacity from 3,300 to just 330 per train set. That tells you that we have many more trains to be able to carry everyone. On the issue of the queues at Lubombo, this matter we are attending to it, but as you may know, Honorable Ansinga, we are engaging our counterparts on the side of Mozambique. We have a huge problem, as you may know, but we are engaging them to ease their measures. Ever since one driver from South Africa, a truck driver, crossed into Botswana and there was screened, found that the temperature was high, was tested and found to be positive. Botswana is now insisting on a mandatory quarantine for all of our truck drivers crossing in there. So many have just diverted to both Bay Bridge and Lubombo, and they are going the longer route in that way to bypass Botswana and go into other countries. And with it, it has increased pressure, but equally, the rest of the SADC countries had heightened their alert levels against South Africa and against truck drivers from South Africa. And with it, we have been discussing with them also the issue of the possibility of exchange of drivers. So at the border, the truck driver drives it into no-man's land, and the other one that side takes it over and proceed with it so that there are no delays. But we have not agreed because they realize that that scenario will protect South African drivers, and it will, because the bulk of the companies hire foreign drivers because they take it, they are cheaper, and so on, and many of them don't even have papers in other instances, which is unfortunate, which previously had started some war. And you would recall that the foreign truck drivers were being banned and others being vandalized and so forth. But we're trying to address all those measures at the same time. Negotiations are continuing. But if you look at where the queues are, that tells you a story that it isn't on our side processing. It is on the side of Mozambique where the problem is at. But we will continue with the negotiations to resolve the matter. The issue about the consideration for provision of additional infrastructure to cater for this driver so long while the queues are there. We will take up this matter because the area is, the borders actually belong to Public Works, but they are operated by Home Affairs. But we transport can engage with our sister departments to see what can be done. I think it's a matter we'll refer immediately to the border committee that discusses this matter at NetJoints. On the issue of the increase in road crashes and the fact that figures are required, I think then we will bring a similar presentation as one we have done previously. We'll update it, Chair, with your indulgence, and bring it back with all the figures of our policing issues. This I'm also answering what Honorable McDonald has raised, that he has gone through 3 provincial borders and was never stopped once. So we will update where our operations have been, what has happened, and and we'll also coordinate and request information from provinces themselves, knowing that the National Traffic Police does not have a single command and a direct chain of command. Provinces control their own and run their own operations. Municipalities and metros also do their same. We have a cohort of the National Traffic Police that does oversight and that does support. So we will have to consolidate all information from everybody and bring it and to show what the response by the traffic office, the police on a national basis has been looking like. And on the issue of whether the alcohol, we ourselves have said that we will we can't monitor on a day-to-day basis. We simply do not have that capacity. We at the end of each period, then do our own assessment and evaluation. We will at the end of the 30-day period, the end of June, we will then do, we have already gotten a first report from SANRAL on the traffic volumes and movement, and we have processed that. We have seen the increase in that, and we have already put through that report on adjoints. We will update it, package it properly for the committee, and we'll also look at where the impact of alcohol has been, and where testing has happened, and where crashes have happened. We will then also update on that. On the issue of the DLTCs and vehicle testing centers, indeed, we were the first ones to say that we will get the RTMC to evaluate the centers and to see whether they are ready for opening. And we are aware of the teething problems we have had on day one and also on the day two. But quickly by day three, I think we had recovered most of the DLTCs were open. We have a full list of all of them that were opened. I had also gone to brief the minister fully about that to indicate where we have not opened. There are those that were assessed and were found not to be ready, and we have not opened them. Is there work between RTMC and these centers and provinces to get them ready? Yes, most certainly there is that work going on. And as days go by, more and more are opening. But yes, certainly we were very clear even in our announcement that those that are not ready will not be opened, and that each will be dealt with on its own merits. The complication is that the DLTCs and VTCs do not belong to us. They all belong to provinces and to municipalities and metros. And we have to rely on the metros and the police and the provinces to get them ready and say to us that we are ready to open. And then RTMC does the assessment and issues them with a letter certifying that indeed they are ready to operate. On the issue of statistics and numbers, Honorable McDonald's have addressed that. We will bring a full report in that regard that indicates what I'm saying. And the issue of auto packs, will the long distance bus auto packs come into play? We are discussing, and I think we have been talking with PRASA, and as part of the restructuring exercise of PRASA and review of the business model, this is one of the 9 items that the minister had tasked the administrator as part of the shareholder compact agreement that we signed with the administrator. We have said that he must reevaluate and relook. Autopex in its current form is not a sustainable business. And I think we've got to be honest and open as possible about it. Do we have intentions of closing it? Not necessarily. We think that it has to be repositioned. By that, I mean that we are looking at the model of the Gautrain, which runs with buses. And the object of these buses is to go onto non-competitive secondary routes, getting people. You see, their bus stops are not where the main routes of other buses and subsidized buses are on. They go to underserviced areas and they collect everybody and they bring them to the station. Even the pricing model for the buses is linked to your ability to train. If you were to try get onto a bus from, say, a place like the far east of Pretoria, and you come by bus and you end up at the Hatfield station, you will pay 70 rand if you simply get out of the station and walk away to somewhere to Hatfield. It will be very expensive. But if within 15 minutes you ride a train, you actually tap your card and go into the station and you actually get onto a train, you pay about 12 rand, I think, for the use of the bus. So you can see that the bus is not intended really to make money. It's intended to bring people to the train, which is the core business of the Gautrain. And we think that the autopex buses can actually do a whole lot more if they were to do that for bringing people to the trains and service the underserviced areas and where the routes are underserviced. Because if you ask me whether if the autopex bus like Translux does not travel between Johannesburg to Cape Town? Will the customers be frustrated? Certainly, we don't think that there will be market failure. We think that the bus companies that are out there privately owned, the difference in tickets, if you really compare, most of the time, Translux is cheaper by just 10 rand. But everybody moves away from it because often than not, the air conditioning is not working, or the onboard toilet is not working, or this or that. And there are all these niggling things of an ailing company that you see in the type of service offering that's there, making customers move away more and more to the private sector, even though it is more expensive by 10 rand or so. So there is really no market failure. Those customers will move on to these other alternatives, but they are underserviced areas in our country. Is there a reliable bus service in this class between Johannesburg and, say, a provincial capital, Mafikeng, an administrative capital of our country by geopolitical boundaries? No, there is no better service. And this is where there is market failure, where the state must come in with subsidized buses and subsidize such market failure. And that's where the role and place where improved autotax should play. But should autotax be kicked out of the lucrative route? Certainly no. But then its offering must be better, and there must be cross-subsidization within the bus company to be able to do that. And we think that if it is moved into Metro Rail as a Metro Rail bus service for now, it will retain its charter as well as long-distance licenses, and it can offer selected routes and service the underserviced areas. And I think that that is the proposal now which the administrator has put before our table to look at. Our people in public transport, not rail, are looking at it, and then we will then send it to the Treasury to discuss that new approach with them. In as far as the request that these entities must be given sufficient money, we agree on Honorable McDonald's, but we also note that we don't have all of that money that they require. But yes, we do agree that they need the support they require, and we can only thank Honorable May for his well wishes, and also extend our hand. And I think I will leave it to the minister to talk to him. On the criteria for taxi relief, Honorable Ramadwa, we have said that the operating license is a valid document by which we know the operator. And that's what we seek to utilize as a basis of paying for this. Secondly, we have also requirements that we have to formalize the sector, and that in return they will have to register for tax and register formal businesses. And I've heard that Honorable Sithole is asking what are we trying to achieve with that. In truth, we are also solving the problem of the taxi industry. You will see that even Santaco has a desk for what they call widow's desk. They say these widows are wives of people who operated taxis, and then they passed on. And now that the taxi license is valid for 7 years, operating licenses, you renew it after every... During the period of validity, it does happen that during that period of validity, an owner or the license holder passes on. And when that happens, typically, the license is not automatically transferred into the name of the surviving spouse, or the widow in this case. So the widow, what they normally do, they continue trading illegally so with a license of the deceased. And whereas the license upon death, because the rights were accruable to the living person, so the license would have fallen off. But they continue trading, and the taxis continue proceeding as if nothing has happened. And sometimes 5 years down the line, you'll find the widow still trading with a license of a deceased who has passed on 5 years ago. Because of all of these challenges, once the taxi industry is formalized and the taxis are registered in the names of businesses, the licenses are issued to businesses and so on, the owners become directors in those businesses. And when they pass on and so on, and the new directors come in, to what this is about in this area. So based on that, I think that is very key concern we want also that to come in. On the issue of the unaccompanied minors, they are being accommodated, but as you may know, I believe that the cases are far and far in between of minors who are supposed to be traveling right now in level 3, seeing that we are looking at limited domestic travel and business and for essential workers or permitted services. So leisure travel is still not allowed, and therefore even the regulations still provide for the movement of children and the permit that needs to be in place. And where those permits are in place, such kids have been accommodated with ease, and that the airlines themselves have had to meet with the parents, and the handover happens at the door of the airport. On the issue of Sandral, Honorable Mabena, indeed, we are not looking only at the National Development Bank. We are also looking at other multinational institutions. But now that you know that Sandral has been downgraded, it's not wise to ask other entities to tell us how much they are going to, because we have already seen their revised figures of what they want to loan to the National Treasury, and you are also seeing their reluctance in lending to the land bank and to others and so forth. So we are swimming in the same. But why NDP? Because South Africa is also an investor of that bank. So, and there is Chinese money in the port. And other of those four other countries, they have been taking up loans from the bank. We have been very cautious in approach, but we think that now the time is opportune and it makes sense for us to also loan some money in there. You'd recall that Eskom was the first one to be granted the loan from the NDP as the first entity in our country. Now we think that Sandral's case is also making sense, and even the Treasury seems inclined to agree on that, and that we would still be able to get money favorably. Nothing called cheap money in terms of lending, but in proof, we can say we get preferential needs in that regard. So yes, there is this indication of where we are going. Are there difficulties with engagement? Like I said when I presented, I think I can present on what is on record with us. We should be very wary of engaging with Santaco and NTA by virtue of what is being said in the media. I don't think that will be right. Should there be protocols, Honorable Mabena?
Yes. And I think it is something perhaps at the table we can raise with them as this happens. That yes, as far as we know, we had written to them requesting that they give us their final feedback by 7th day. If indeed they did not like the feedback, they should have come to the table and said, we don't think we like what we see or whatever, but
I think
that will be helpful. But I'll leave it to the minister
to respond. But where we are quite keen on proceeding with what we are doing. We have been talking with them ever since COVID happened. There's never been a time. Minister has always ended his meetings by indicating that he's available anytime, and the president or even the SG were free to call him anytime. And to be fair to the NTA, we are still to hear the NTA saying anything negative in as far as our engagements are concerned. We think that we will hear from them on Thursday, but so it would be wrong also to put NTA as well into the same basket, because they haven't said anything formally in the open about any of this. We have been talking to them at the table. On the issue of sanitizers, where there is a shortage, we would want to, but you'd recall that earlier in the intervention, we were doing the direct procurement. But now you may know that the Treasury has since reinvested some money for provinces as well as municipalities to be able to be the ones who procure these things. We are still required to provide the screening devices, and you say you want numbers. We are buying 20,000 of these things to give to each and every marshal and so on. Just yesterday, we were discussing with our acting CFO to say we need to take the process to its logical conclusion and distribute quickly in this regard. We will, where, as I've indicated previously, where necessary, continue to provide support. We were requested by NetJoins to support basic education with provision of sanitizers for learner scholar transport providers. That will be in, we have done that and we have met the deadline of ensuring that provision. Will we be able to continue supporting? Yes, we are talking now. We are looking at finalizing where the shortage were, was reported to us by both NTA and Santaco. And it's largely the rural taxi ranks and so on, and we'll be providing our support to that front. Honorable Shabangu, the tracing issue, originally we had directed that on commute service of taxis, that now drivers should start recording people. It was to prove quite difficult, but also the National Institute of Communicable Diseases said to us that we shouldn't do it, because they were then to proceed with an app that was to do electronic tracing by actually following your cell phones. And as you may recall, there was a designated clinical judge in terms of Regulation 5 protocols. And you would also, at Level 5, those regulations provided for the judge to provide permission for tracking and tracing of people by virtue of where their cell phones have been and in what proximity they were with. And I think on that basis, we disengaged on the issue of tracing and tracking. And therefore, should a driver test positive, the protocols that are in place will then be followed. And the tracking of passengers based on the presence of their cell phones and where they were at that time will, and they can then trace people as to where they've been picked up and where they stay. On the issue of monies to entities, we will safeguard against corruption. And in fact, we are happy with the heightened awareness of the Office of the Auditor General, as well as your enforcement agencies, who are following up on this expenditure on COVID. Even COVID in our department, we have created a separate line item for it so that it can also be audited separately, and we can look at the issues related thereto. And we will insist on the report and on tracking of what the entities are doing. And I think we'll try to mitigate against abuse. May there be a possibility, you ask, that we are required to provide more money to the entities in any time near? Like I said, we do not know what the variables are. Our care is only now on the upward thing. We're going to reach its highest peak most probably in September, October, somewhere there. And if that be the case, and should it be required that we go back into lockdown level 5 or whatever, obviously the entities will be hit much more. So the answer is dependent on how the pandemic turns out and how well South Africans are responsive to the measures that have been put in place, and how robust are those measures to contain and make sure that we navigate this problem. Honorable Sito, the number of cases we have talked about, no, 113,000 licensed operators, valid licenses on the OLA system that we have, the National Land Transport Information System. We, however, note that the taxi industry has made presentations of an additional 137,000 taxis, which they say are operating with some slip, some receipt that says I have applied for a permit. It has not been given to me yet, but somehow I'm already operating. And it appears over the years, several agencies have been classified, accepting it as a document that comes across instead of the actual license, operating license. And to that extent, they've made real representation to say those people must be included into the fold. We had responded to them to say, as long as they put it to us in writing and they accept that, then with it, if we are to pay those people too must be formalized. And if they meet those two requirements, then we're happy. But those people with the slips, we still have got to meet the provincial registering entities requirements that their vehicles must be roadworthy, that their own permits as drivers and all of those things, PDPs are in order, and all the requirements that the operators need to prove so that they can be formalized and get an operating license. And then which associations are we engaging? SANTACO is the concern, and we are engaging also with the NTA as the largest taxi association. So there's this mutual understanding that we will engage both. They may not really like each other, but we do engage with all of them to ensure that we can avoid challenges of where one plays ball and one that does not. And then on the issue of Anjouf increases in fares, we are aware about this, but as you know, the current regulations prohibit illegal profiteering and the utilization of COVID for purposes of undue hiking of fares. We are not opposed that people may increase fares, but even with the statement of our minister, he was very clear to say that fares may be increased. However, they must be fair. They must take into consideration the conditions of the consumers or the passengers or commuters that use the service, and majority of whom are poor. And minister calls upon everybody to be level-headed in approaching this thing and understanding that we are in a crisis, more so considering that government will provide the relief. So having said that, all of those that then do any other thing that may be considered outside of what the parameters are, inside, not us, but other authorities such as the Competition Commission, to review and to look at whether indeed what they are doing constitutes illegal profiteering or not. And at no stage have we ever said ourselves that we are opposed to anybody increasing fares. The fares were due to be increased, perhaps they were, but those cases must be made clearly. Consultation did normally get done. And there mustn't be arbitrariness in the system, and I think this has been the call of the minister. So if it is alleged that we are intimidating their associations and what, and stopping them from increasing fares, I think that is very far from the truth. I believe I've answered everything, unless I've left anything. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. If I recall, the minister had said he'll come after you. Let me allow the minister to have his take. Over to you, Honorable Minister.
Yeah, DG, we loma. I'm not going to go to town. I think DG have covered all the questions. I'm going to deal with the key political things that arise. DG have dealt with the operational questions that needed to be dealt with. First, honorable members, I once more again welcome your input and your comment in terms of the work that we are doing, and also making suggestions about what needs to happen going forward. It is quite clear that COVID-19 is going to be with us for quite some time. It's not a weekend special. It is going to be with us for quite some time. We need to adapt to the new normal and need to entrench education to our people for life preservation and in all fronts. And the transport is key in terms of contributing to the containment of the virus. So in this instance, it is critical that the human solidarity that we have seen in the Republic and a reservoir of goodwill among our people is sustained. We can only win this if we work together. And one member have already, you know, asserted that particular position. There's no way that government can do it alone, even in regulations and so on. As much as we go back and forth and inside the courts and litigation, fine and good, but at the end is our lives. That must be preserved. It's my life, it's your life, and we will be affected. The way it goes and all of that, we are not immune. And the lives are passing on and so on. People are passing away in big numbers. And we knew that the dark days are ahead, and it is happening rapidly and in a way that is unprecedented. Our approach has been cautious. It's about looking at the risks. That is our approach. And at the same time, to readjust. And this is what we've been doing. And there is a phased-in approach. We're at level 3 now. And we're going down. And we're discussing these matters every day, and even the regulations. But equally, the economy must operate, must function. People must not totally find themselves in the periphery. But this COVID-19 has simply wiped, you know, the little that has actually been there, and increased our challenges economically. And these are some of, this is the balancing act we've got to maintain at all times. DG dealt with the issue of PRASA. Just to say to members, PRASA, we are on track. PRASA is a broken place, the network completely unprotected. But even Gautrain was affected during the lockdown by this, criminality that seeks to vandalize the rail network in South Africa, stealing copper cables, cooking them, you know, in the laboratories, and then exporting it to Mozambique and to Asia. And PRASA with no security in the network has been hard hit by this. And you ask what are the reasons PRASA is not operational. First is the fact that PRASA is crippled when it comes to the financial resources. You know that we're talking about 4.7 or so shortfall in terms of its operations. And PRASA has been making a case before even COVID-19 to transfer part of its capex resources to operations in order to get the startup and run and to be able to be operational. But that place has been a place where each and everyone does as they wish. These security companies, big syndicates operate in that space of PRASA. Big syndicates operate in that space. Thugs, who some of them, want to force the hand of the state in PRASA to give them what is undue to them, and they use syndicate modes to put pressure. There's no way that is the state is going to succumb to that. Instead, the authority of the state is going to be to ensure security of the network and the protection of the network. And that is the major focus. Those security companies, who some of them majority, have been found to be part of this milieu in PRASA of people who benefited unlawfully and through corrupt means, are the ones who are twisting the hand. Because we had a weak board of governors in PRASA, and we had weak systems and a totally collapsed management. They were doing as they wish. They get what they want. And at the end of the day, the AG found that they are irregular. All of those things are irregular because there's no management. And what Mpondo is doing there with the team is to clean. And over and above that is to bring systems, bring human beings into the system in order to manage this thing from a point of knowledge and capacity. But be firm on running a company of that magnitude with billions. Those billions are not spent. If they were spent, they were irregularly spent. We don't, the security companies that exist and that operate in that particular environment, their term is temporary. Our objective at PRASA is to have permanent sustainable security. At the security that is going to oversee the combat approach in terms of defending the network, but the security that is also going to deal with the human element, marshal the people, ensure that people are not, robbed and stuff like that. If you were to bring PRASA back on the, on the network and operational, you are duty bound to accept that you are transporting the virus. You are transporting the virus, and that's what is going to happen. We need to minimize that. We need to minimize that, and that is why we have to postpone and from level 4 to now, to basically prepare for that. And then when we come to the portfolio committee, we announce plans, we speak about what we need to do, what's going to happen at PRASA. The gangsters are watching on us. And then they vandalize, they loot that network so that the operations cannot go back online. I'm certain we'll go back online on the 1st of July. It will be limited. And even if it means we need to increase even from what we have mentioned, but we'll be ready in those lines to be operational. And the corridors that have completely collapsed and that carry at least 20,000 people a day, like in Cape Town and also in Mabopane, we are expecting the construction work to begin in earnest in those particular areas. So it's all hands on deck. And at the same time, building the capacity. The taxi fares issue you are talking about, it has shocked all of us. I'm supposed to meet with the taxi industry, and I leave it there. But there's no way in this country that anyone can raise fares beyond the cost of living for ordinary South Africans. Yes, it is inflation-driven, and all of that, everybody is allowed. But it cannot be 172% to 300% increase. We've got competition commission and all of that. All of those things will be looked at so that we don't impoverish our people who rely on the minibus taxi for their own survival. The tracking queues, I lie with Honorable Hansinger on this, and some of the suggestions we make are important. Which we may want to look at the question of capacity is important. But COVID-19 arrives when South Africa is looking at the porous borders. And at the same time, in terms of addressing the porous borders, there is a bill that is now before the National Council of Provinces that talks about the borderline company that must include everybody in order to address the issue of our borders. And this is what you see, but I understand in the context of COVID-19, we've been working very hard. You will know, Honorable Hansinger, some of the things you brought to our attention. We've had to intervene in Botswana, where some of our truck drivers were affected, and they were infected with COVID-19, and Botswana government took steps to protect its own citizens, and the quarantining laws there were very steep, and it affected us dearly. And thanks for coming to the party and not be on the sidelines, and work with us to even bring information we don't have in certain instances, and we've stepped up our game to cooperate, because this is what we need to do in terms of this matter. Road crashes. There are road crashes, including this afternoon. The allegation is that the driver was poop drunk on the truck this afternoon, who got a whole lot of other people. It's an allegation. Our team from RTMC has been on the ground to investigate that. And the preliminary reports point at the drunken driving as a source of this. We've got the figures here, which we'll supply, Chair, about the statistics. Members are interested in statistics. We'll give you the figures in terms of COVID-19, I mean, at level three, the number of... Of course, you will have these accidents back to life because there was a total shutdown. As we go back to normal life and transport on the road and so on, we had heavy trucks on the road for cargo, but we didn't have ordinary citizens also driving. Coming back, it has also brought that thing, you know, that Achilles heel, that, you know, thing that make us not to sleep. Many accidents on our road at the core. Of course, there is drunken driving behavior in that, culpable homicide and all of that, reckless driving and so on. We analyzing that information on a daily basis, but bringing the economy back to life, it brings back our problems that we live with on daily basis, drunken driving, problems of reckless driving, lots of accidents on our road. And so on, and it takes me right to the problem of e-tolls. E-tolls are on top of the government cabinet agenda. McDonald, Honorable McDonald, that matter will be finalized soon. We are discussing the matter. We are almost at the end. It's at the level of cabinet. It has left the committees. Really, we were interrupted by COVID-19. So cabinet must finalize that matter, and we'll pronounce on it as quick as we can. And I can't put time frames. As soon as it is on the agenda, then we are good to go. So, but e-tolls are on the agenda. So we'll finalize that very soon. The taxi industry. Look, we have been talking to the taxi industry. And all what we need to understand, we're talking relief. We're not talking a fund for taxi industry. All you know, sectors of the economy are in distress. They are in distress, and I agree with you. There's a lot of non-compliance if you look at the modes of transport. We need to work with the taxi industry. I was in Cape Town last week, and they implement a Red Dot campaign. Where they take essential workers to work. What impressed me about that cooperation between the taxi industry, even though government is paying a lot of money in relation to that, the Red Dot thing is addressing the essential workers, getting to work and then without any hassles. But part of it, it brought in the application of the app, which they are using to trace the taxis around. So we are going to need an innovation to monitor somehow this compliance issue. It's not only you. I get these complaints myself personally as a minister that taxis don't comply. We've got to use some innovation. But at the end of the day, we must get to 100%. 100% loading of taxis. We are discussing now with the health people about 100%, even 70% in the taxi. It doesn't address social distance. Go to the taxi and see 70%. It doesn't at all. I'm not convinced. Now, the question is, what is it that we need to do basically to bring safety inside the taxi? Is it a must? Now, everybody is coming with a mask into the taxis and everywhere. I hear people say that our people are not obedient. I've been on the ground. I'm there in the morning to see the opening of the GLTCs, driving license centers, and I see people, you know, on their own, not impressive, not for the cameras. I've been deep in Soweto, you know, in the busiest centers for Riavaya, and I've seen our people taking it to heart, and we need to deepen the education. It's important to put on your mask so as to avoid being infected, minimize. It's important to sanitize. Government does help with regard to sanitizers, masks, and all of that, but individuals is now in their hands to also take responsibility. Wash your hands, and at the same time, put on your mask. You know, if you don't have a mask, it has been made easy. Use a cloth. You can use whatever that it is. I've seen people doing that, and especially when people gather en masse. We need to intensify that education. Taxi industry, we've got issues that are being raised in the public discourse. The taxi industry raising issues about the relief. Government have agreed to contribute to the relief of the taxi industry, but the relief must be understood. It's not a fund. It's not a sustainable compensation. It is assistance and is minimal, you know. I mean, if you look at the tourism industry, they only got 200 million. If you look at arts industry, hard hit, those people are not going to open anytime soon. There's not going to be a disco for artists. Concerts are not going to take place soon. But they got mega support, you know, about 150 million. And yeah, we're talking about the biggest industry ever. And we allowed the industry to operate even in shutdown, 70%. And some of them are even not compliant. They undermine and all of that. But the taxi industry has been hard hit and in distress like all other industries, especially long distance. Long distance has been shut down, you know. I'm not talking about people who it is in their DNA to undermine the law. South African drivers and taxi owners, you know, it's in their DNA to undermine the law. I go to the roadblock, I arrest people who drive people without any documentation. And they run away, they speed off and all of that. So I see that, and I see it right here, people undermining the rule of law. So we are working on formalizing the industry. It's a big debate which we have found in this ministry, and we are pursuing it, and we seek to bring a consensus at the Indaba on this so that we begin to talk about real stuff, subsidizing the industry. How do they begin to see the money that is injected into the industry translated into the pockets, but at the same time to bringing about formalization, paying of taxes, and then being accountable, minimizing the infighting and fighting over routes, and so on. And that is it. Of course, we've got a big challenge. When we've got to give people relief in the taxi industry, we have to discuss modalities with them. And that is what has delayed us. The principle is done. We've got the round figure of how much Treasury is able to give us to subsidize, I mean, to not to subsidize, to support the industry. We've got it. And because DG has been negotiating with them and sharing information with them about this and been very open about it and discussing the modalities. Modalities meaning how much and who must get the money, because we don't have a fund. We are not going to have another middleman to do this work, whatever that it is. The money will move from state coffers straight to the taxi owner. That's it. You come, you produce whatever that you got, and that is what we are prepared to do. And we've been discussing with them about this. And to an extent that they are murmuring and they are unhappy, I'm going to discuss with them. And I'm happy to talk to them. There's no need to fight. We all have got to come to the party, all hands on deck. We have taken sacrifices. We have made sacrifices. From government, we have cut down on our salaries. Everybody, the poorest of the poor, have been, some of them are not working. And we try to meet them halfway. 350 for others, you know. It's an all-round working together arrangement. It cannot be governed by threats. It cannot be informed by demands. There is no point to demand anything. Government have got to look at who must be supported. If we've got 500 billion, that 500 billion is going to be allocated to industries, is going to be allocated to South Africans. Already, we are giving people who are in need and vulnerable a biggest share in this 500 billion in terms of addressing their needs and increasing social security net already. So it's diverse. So when we come to the party for a taxi, that's it. We are looking at 100% fill up of the taxis at level 3. We are discussing it, and I've told them that is the case. Their buses also are raising their issues, who are not being subsidized by the state. But there are those buses that are subsidized by the state who are also making their claim that they've not been making any profits and all of that. And we have also referred them to the packages that have been made and that they need to benefit as registered companies from that. The taxi industry, we understand. We've got to put their hand, because we can't equate them to all other companies because they are not registered for their workers to benefit out of UIF. Otherwise, it will be a different ball game altogether. So we are looking at that. But the COVID-19 arrives and catches with us when we were already busy with this discussion. And it's going to be unfortunate if we walk away from each other. That's not my interest. Government will no longer just give a blank check on anything. We want a partnership. And that partnership we're going to bring on the table will involve issues of subsidy, but equally it's going to involve formalization of the taxi industry. It's a big debate because many people don't believe in that because they don't pay tax. And the big argument is that taxi people pay taxes when they buy taxi, when they buy, you know, and all of that. But the income that they got is not taxed, and that's it. And the industry is not subsidized. We've got to move somehow to formalization and have this big discussion. It has to be opened up and all of that. So we are working on that. And my last point is that the increase on fares is a big challenge. The increase on fares is a big challenge also that require a discussion. I'm perturbed by that, and I can only resolve by talking to the industry. So I hear them speaking and deciding unilaterally on increasing of fares, and I think every industry does so. And it cannot be compared. I mean, if you talk about aviation, it's hard hit. Look at the Comair. It is liquidated completely. It's out of business. And that's what we're dealing with. And those are industries that are in total distress. If you talk about the AXA, they came before you, 11 billion that we need to address with them. And the DG addressed that in detail in terms of the presentation. But Chair, thank you very much for the questions and some of the issues we have that will inform our approach. We meet every Tuesday in the Department of Transport to look at our input into COVID-19 and at the same time to look at our own program of action as we open up the economy. That is the stage of level 3 going forward, and also implementing the differentiated approach in terms of the hotspots inside the country. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, and the entire officials from the department. Thank you for the detailed presentation. We now know what you are doing, and we wish you well going to level 2, of course. Let me just make some few concluding remarks from my side. I do appreciate the fact that the DG is saying the engagements with the taxi industry are ongoing.
and I believe we must take them seriously, irrespective of how we feel and how they feel. As government, as leaders, we must be able to rise to the occasion and deal with this matter amicably, notwithstanding the challenges that will come across. It is our wish as the committee to see this matter settled and settled amicably. The issue of GFIP, I think I must say from the chair that the Honorable McDonald is correct. I think this matter has been overtaken by events. If we're able to deal with this matter timeously, I understand the department cannot do it alone, but cabinet has to come to the party. And I think we must make such a call that this matter has been overtaken by events. Hence, PRASA is now downgraded. And if we had dealt with this matter timelessly, we could have avoided a number of complications that we find ourselves in. Nevertheless, let's wish you well and in your endeavors to get this matter resolved. It's long overdue. Professor, as you have said it, I think what the committee is saying is that let's also try and prioritize security properly. People cannot continue looting. I think we need to put a stop to that. We appreciate, of course, the presentation by Mr. Mpondo as to how is he going to deal with the issues. And we are looking forward to a situation, Honorable Minister and the department, where we are going to close a chapter of the previous regime and concentrate on what we are fixing our program and be able to play an oversight on what we are doing currently. We want to applaud you also that you are ready to take a discussion with the taxi industry, discussing the subsidization of this industry. It augurs well with this committee. I think we must say that we wish you well, and we are with you. We will support where we need to support and strengthen where we need to play our oversight. Let me then take this opportunity and say to all the honorable members and the members who are with us here, it was worth having this meeting as playing our role, that of an oversight. I think we can go back now and talk to our people and say what is happening, because we now know. The last issue I want to raise is that the issue of alcohol should not be looked into as an issue of closing alcohol and opening alcohol. I think we need to take a deeper look into this matter and begin to deal with an issue of eating and drinking with responsibility. This COVID-19 has shown to us that we have given alcohol a free ride, that people could drink from Monday to Monday. And I think we must be bold to say, let's build a country that is responsible. With those words, let me not go lololo, and wish all the members the safety during this lockdown period. Let's act responsible as leaders, ensure that we adhere to the regulations as they are passed and we become part of the solution. With that having said, let me take this opportunity and say I declare this meeting officially closed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good night.
Good night. Good night, everybody.
Good night to all of you.
Let's go home.
Good night.
Level 2, let's open saloon.
Thank you, Mangesa.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mangesa.
Yeah, let's open saloons. Level 2, DG, I can see that. I wonder, where are you? Are you finding an opportunity to smart yourself? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Fighter. Thank you.
We'll do it from home.
Minister, may I brief you on tomorrow's program?
No.
Tomorrow morning. All right. Thank you.